Going Linux, episode 134, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
In today's episode, listener feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. Well, Tom, today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.
Well, it's brought to them by Audible.
Yeah, well, it's brought to all of us by Audible.
And it is. And right now, if people want to receive audiobooks, they will need to use Audible's proprietary player in Windows, Windows in a virtual machine, or Wine, since they don't yet have a player that runs natively under Linux. If you have one of those options available to you, then we have a special URL that lets you sign up for a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial.
If you can't or won't run Windows or the proprietary audio player, we'd like you to sign up for your free trial anyway and then contact Audible at audible.custhelp.com to let them know that you want a Linux player so that you can listen to their content. If you're an open source software developer, we'd love it if you would contact Audible at greatideas@audible.com and help them in their efforts to develop a player for Linux.
And if you're a developer and you have contacted them, let us know how that's turning out. Are they receptive to the idea? Is there progress being made? We don't know. But in the meantime, the place to go to get our special offer from Audible is audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. You get a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial today by signing up at, and I'm going to spell it, audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux.
All right, Tom. So since we last spoke, I've released the episode 133, which was the audio from my presentation at Southern California Linux Expo, and that went very well.
Yes, it did.
And the audio was not our normal high-quality audio because, well, there's a lot of technical reasons for that.
Sure.
Not the least of which was it wasn't recorded with great quality, and there's only so much you can do with bad source material.
Sure.
On the other hand, it was good content, I think, and certainly the audience seemed to appreciate it. And I'm hoping that Southern California Linux Expo, who contracted with a company to do a video recording of the presentation, will actually make that available. Unfortunately, the only person who seems to be able to get to it is me.
Oh.
And yeah, so I can see the video, I can play it, I can listen to the audio that goes along with it, but I can't seem to send anyone a link. I tried sharing it with Allison Sheridan of the Nocilla Cast, and she opened it and, or she tried to get to it and open it, and it was asking her to sign up and give away her firstborn child and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know what's going on there, but I'm hoping they'll make it a little more publicly available. I hope that the company they contracted with isn't going to be holding us hostage to share that information.
Did you look in your TMP file?
For the video?
Yeah. If the video's open, mm-hmm, and it's completely loaded, it's all buffered to the end, it might be under a very funny name in your TMP file.
Well, I think they're using some sort of proprietary playing software thingy, streaming, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I'll take a look. I haven't looked, but I don't hold out a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Of course, I could turn on, with the screen recording software and just record it as I'm playing it. There's always ways around this stuff. But the quality isn't all that good when you try to do that, because it's a tiny little picture on the screen and they don't let you blow it up full screen. So anyway, we'll see what happens. Hopefully they'll make it available and I won't have to do any of that stuff.
Okay.
So what's going on with you, sir?
Let's see. Well, I was talking to Bill last night, and he said that he had tried, I don't know, an alpha or something of the upcoming release of Ubuntu that's using Unity.
Unity.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he said it looks like Fisher-Price meets Apple or something on that order.
Well, they still have a little ways to go before they release it yet, so... They do a lot of stuff in the last few minutes, you know.
right. And I asked him, I said, yeah, but you can still boot GNOME, right? And he said, well, no, you can boot GNOME Shell. Oh.
Okay, I thought they weren't going to use GNOME Shell.
I don't know. Maybe Bill's wrong.
I don't know. Well, we'll see when we get it.
But anyway, I thought, well, I'm going to take a look at GNOME Shell. So I installed it. It turns out it's in the repositories under GNOME-SHELL, and it installed all right. And then I got a little bit smart, and I logged in as a different user.
You're learning your lesson, aren't you?
Yes, I am. But looking down in the options for what desktop to boot up, GNOME Shell wasn't there.
Oh.
I don't know why. So possibly I have to go into a config menu and have it use GNOME Shell instead of GNOME. And I'm a little gun-shy these days, so.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, I haven't read up on GNOME Shell at all, so
yeah.
I don't know what you need to do yet. And I'll cross that bridge when I get to it, I guess.
Yeah, I looked at some screenshots of it. It looks all right.
Okay, well, I haven't looked at it at all. I'm a little nervous that, you know, the GNOME people are going to do the same thing with GNOME that the KDE people did with KDE
when they did the
complete rewrite and revamp. They took everything that it was capable of doing, stripped it down to just the basics, and released that with the new stuff. Now they're back up to speed. You can do everything that you used to be able to do on KDE 3.5 or 3.8 or whatever it was. Now, on the current version of 4. Whatever. But hopefully GNOME doesn't do that. Hopefully they make it better, as well as rewriting it and upgrading it and changing the whole way you use GNOME. So we'll see. We'll see when it happens. And in the meantime, we are happily continuing to use Ubuntu 10.10 and 10.04 in your case.
10.04 in my case and 32 in my case. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, one thing before we go on, I found a great little article, and we'll put a link in the show notes over at Linux Planet, and it's for people...
Well, we'll put the show notes on our site, not over on Linux.
That's right. Right. you're right.
It's just the way you said it.
Anyway, it's some software. Let's say you've got an older computer, and you want to put Ubuntu on there, but you go into your BIOS... And there is not an option to boot from a disk or to boot from a USB. So now you're stuck. Well, no, there is a way. There's a piece of software called Plop. Why they make these funny names, I don't know. But Plop will allow you to boot from a USB stick or a CD, even if your computer's BIOS doesn't have that built in. It's pretty cool. So, if you want to have a look at that, go look at the Linux Planet article, and we'll have the link in the show notes.
Sounds great. Yeah, I had an old computer. I think I've told you this story before. I had an old computer that is pre-netbook, but it's kind of designed like a netbook. It doesn't have a CD-ROM drive, and it's really old. It only has USB 1.0 or maybe 1.1 at best. And so it will not boot from USB, and of course, it's really old, so I've lost the external CD-ROM drive.
Yeah,
so installing on it is a bit of a challenge, but good news is the hard drive just slides out and I can slide it into an external enclosure, install the Linux on there, and then put it back in the machine and it boots up. So that's how I do my installations on that machine.
Cool.
But this might be useful, provided that it works with USB old point old.
Yeah, point old, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, shall we get into our audio feedback and listener feedback and all that good stuff?
Let's do that. We got lots of good audio feedback today.
We do.
And some of it's kind of long. I think we're going to push that out into its own episode.
Yeah, some of these are really good, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into it here. But we've got audio feedback from AJ, Danny, Richard, Robert, and Bill so far. Mm-hmm. And AJ is from Linux Geekdom, of course. He's a good buddy of our podcast here. Mm-hmm. He's got his own podcast that was on hiatus, shall we say. We won't say pod faded.
No.
It was on hiatus for a while, and he's letting us know that they're back. So here's AJ's audio.
Hey, Larry. It's AJ from Linux Geekdom. How you doing? Listening to Simulators episodes, great job. Two questions for you. One, I got the podcast up and going, so if you could post that on the air. I know you said you'll post this on the air, so everyone who's out there listening to this, Linux Geekdom is back up and running, so come check out my show. We've got a bunch of new episodes up. The Garbage Rant and Ramble is basically just explaining why I've been away. And then we have two new episodes, including Linux and Businesses, A Joining of the Mind, and Linux Why Not Part 2, which is, and Linux Why Not was definitely our most popular episode. But anyway, enough about my advertising. Two questions for you. One, what program did you use to record the screencast? I did it once, and I forgot the name of the program, so if you could remind me for that. And then two, how did you set up this Google voicemail thing? Or the voicemail for feedback? I'd like to do that for my website. So if you could, is it a paid service or is it something that you have to, is it free? Just let me know, okay? Drop me a line at aj@linuxgeekdom.com. Thanks. Talk to you later. Bye.
And welcome back, AJ. Yeah, the screencast software that I used was something called Desktop Recorder. Yeah, that's what it is. Desktop Recorder. Really simple program. And the voicemail line is simply Google Voice. If you look at the Google website or Gmail or any of those, you can sign up for Google Voice. And one of your options there is to get a phone number. Now, be very careful that you don't port your own cell phone number or other phone number over and have Google Voice replace your number with that. You want to have a new number for use for capturing audio. I'm assuming that's what you're looking for.
Right, and I'm looking at his site right now, and he's got three rapid-fire episodes that he did. And the last one was on February 22nd, so time for another one there, AJ.
Yeah, and AJ actually came on Computer America the last time I was on and plugged his podcast again.
Yes, I know.
And so he's been on a lot. So
yeah.
Good luck, AJ. Keep it coming. Sounds good.
So who's next, Larry?
Well, Bill sent us some good stuff. Your good friend Bill, our good friend Bill, but you're the one who talks to him most of the time.
Sure.
He's done a distro review of CrunchBang and a bunch more stuff, all in 5 minutes.
All right, well, let's listen to that, and good job, Bill. Thank you.
Hello, we're Larry and Tom. I've been distro hopping over the past few months, and I decided to share my impressions and experiences of some of the ones I've tried. First, I went to DistroWatch. You can Google DistroWatch, and that's probably the easiest way to find the site. But what DistroWatch does is it watches all the Linux distributions and ranks them by popularity. Since there's so many different ones, I decided to look for the ones that are geared for new and average Linux users like me, and try to find the ones that made things easier. But before I go any farther, I gotta thank Tom. I've texted him, called him, and sent emails to him, and he's helped me work through some technical problems and heard me gripe and whine and basically encouraged me as I had my little trip down Distro Lane. Okay, the list, and this is in no certain order. I tried Debian, Ubuntu 10.10, Ubuntu 10.04, Linux Mint, Fedora, OpenSUSE, CrunchBang, PC Linux OS, and Mandriva, which I'm still testing. Since there's so much information, I decided to just cover the general aspects of each, and should you find one, you can kind of explore it on your own. I will point out anything that would set it apart from the others. My first distro that I'm going to review is CrunchBang. Now, a disclaimer here. I use CrunchBang as my default operating system. I've been running it for about 3 weeks now. CrunchBang is a Debian-based distribution using the OpenBox Window Manager. It's the same thing as what would KDE, Linux, or LXDE, or Fluxbox. It's just another way of working with Linux. So that's how you can think of it. Now my machine is a Lenovo SL410 ThinkPad, and it's usually pretty good with all the Linux distributions, so very little problems with it. From DistroWatch, I just picked the CrunchBang and went right to their website from the link. After reading up on it, it offered me two ways to download it, a direct download or a BitTorrent. I decided to try the BitTorrent to see how fast I could get it. I got the whole download in under 15 minutes. That means a lot of people are seeding it. And so I like it so much I continued seeding it after I've been running it. Once I burned it to a disk, I rebooted, and it come up and it asked what kind of install I wanted. I chose the graphical install, me being the most, I wanted to be as simple as possible. And then CrunchBang walked me through the whole process, and I can't say this enough, it was dead simple. Everything is explained, and you will not face any scary screens or weird archaic messages. The total install took under 20 minutes. After it had installed, it'll say, do you want to restart? And you click yes. It ejects the disk and then goes up to the boot screen. And you're prompted with your login. So you type your username and your password. And the first thing, a script pops up and asks you if you'd like to install some extras. And it's in a terminal window, but every time it offers you a choice, it'll explain what it's going to do in easy to understand English. There's only two things I do not take in this install is the Java and the experimental kernel, or it's a newer kernel than the one. It's supposed to be a little faster, but not as stable. Since it's already blazingly fast, I just keep the same kernel because I want stability. I like to install the Java with the Synaptic Package Manager just because for me it just makes more sense, but you can do it however you like. Once the pop-up script's done, it closes and you've got a fully working system. It already did the updates. Again, I want to emphasize everything is explained to you. You won't see any weird messages going, what does that mean? Out of the box, CrunchBang can play MP3, DVDs, and Adobe Flash. It comes with a VLC media player, which will play just about anything under the sun. It comes with transmission BitTorrent client and the Chromium browser, which is the open source browser from Google. CrunchBang is extremely easy to customize, and there's some really great looking wallpapers. I've included some to show you what it looks like and what an up and running system looks like with a little customization. Again, I would say that this distribution is probably one of the nicest ones if you like a minimalist and clean interface. And it uses very little resources, so old hardware should be just like a speed demon. Well, that pretty much concludes the review of CrunchBang. The next one is going to be Linux Mint, and I look forward to letting you know about it later. Bye.
Wow, Bill, you crammed a lot into that short little contribution.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
Well done. And there's an example for others. Hey, if you want to do a review or a tutorial or whatever, you come up with your own content, record it, we'll play it.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the reasons why we are going to be pushing off some of the audio contributions people have made. They are, in some cases, 10, 15, 20 minutes or more in length. And so they're really their own podcast episodes. So if you have some brief tips or full-length tutorials or observations about something or suggestions, and you provide us with an audio recording of you talking about that, or you with somebody else talking about that,
sure,
or just talking to your dog or your cat or whatever, and you think it would make for some good content for us, we'd be happy to sit back and listen instead of sitting forward and talking
right,
through these episodes.
Right.
And it might give the rest of our listeners a little variation on the number of people and the different voices and, you know, some
a break
variety.
From us.
Yeah, a break from us. That's what I'm trying to say. Exactly. But no, seriously, though, if you have contributions, we would be happy to play them on the show, regardless of length. Well, if they're 2 hours, we might have a problem, but
right. But there's an opportunity
we'll
for you if you're thinking about having your own podcast, but you're on the rail. Here's a way for you to dip your toe in the water, see what it's like without having to host your own site or anything.
Right. You're a member of the Going Linux community. Let's,
right. The family.
Let's make this a community project here.
Sure.
So we're open to that. So that's great.
As long as it's sort of about Linux, we don't need any political rants or anything.
Oh yeah, we're not going to do that. It has to be about this is the Going Linux podcast, not the Going Political
right.
podcast.
So subject to the judge's opinion.
All right. Our next audio feedback is from Richard. And Richard actually provided us with two. One is a full-length Audacity tutorial, and we'll include that in its own episode. But as an adjunct to that, Richard provided us a quick 2-minute review of how he uses Levelator for his podcast Using Wine. So let's listen to what he has to say.
Hi, Larry and Tom. This is Richard from Toronto. I'd like to describe what I'm doing with Levelator and Wine using Mint 10. And I've downloaded and installed Wine. A couple of little things that I've discovered downloading and installing Wine. Of course, we pick the Windows version of it to download, and you have to set the on the exe file, you have to set the execute bit using Nautilus, and then using Nautilus again, I right clicked on the file and installed it that way, and it seemed to work fine. A couple of other little problems that I've had with once Wine was installed successfully on the machine, and once Levelator was installed within that, I tried to use it, and normally Levelator will only talk to WAV files, .wav, and so on a Windows environment, you have to drag the WAV file onto the little black box called the Levelator, and it starts to chunk away at it, and it'll kick out another identical file with an additional dot output in the file name. So wherever the file folder was, Levelator will put the output file right next to it in the same folder. But what I found when I clicked to drag and drop the file onto Levelator, it didn't work. It just bounced back to the original location. And so I double-clicked on the Levelator, and it came up with a navigation box. I navigated to the input file, the WAV file, and away it went. It chunked away, and it kicked out the results file into the same folder, and I'm very happy with it. So this audio voice clip that I'm doing right now was processed this exact same way. Anyway, from Toronto, my name is Richard. Thanks very much, and wonderful show. Keep it up. Bye-bye.
All right, and to follow up Richard's conversation about Levelator, he wrote in his email, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Richard.
I got it right this time. He's the guy who said, "Hi, Larry and Bob" last time.
Okay.
"You're probably tired of hearing from me by now, but I just completed my first podcast post-production completely in Linux. I have attached a sound clip explaining the process. I would not be surprised if you decided not to play this because it's 11 minutes long. And like I said, you're probably sick of hearing from me by now. If you do decide to use this, you may want to cancel my last sound clip." Well, Richard, we will play your 11-minute one as its own episode, and the sound clip on Levelator we just played, so that's great. He continues, "I'm now trying to use the GIMP to fix up my picture for my website. Nothing can help my picture, but the GIMP is a wonderful program." That's another story. Thank you. Good job, guys. Richard Rookcroft from Toronto, rustymicrophone.com.
Rusty microphone? Oh, yeah, that's what it says.
That's what it is, yeah.
And I've tried using Levelator in Wine, and first time I tried it years ago, it worked, and now it doesn't. I don't know why.
Okay, well, maybe we can follow Richard's quick tutorial there and see what we can do.
Well, Danny sent us a file for inclusion in our podcast, and the topic is everyday tasks that can be done with Linux, and it really leans toward people who are sight impaired. He's a blind computer user, and his discussion includes topics that would be of interest to both blind and sighted users. And this one is 26 minutes, and that's definitely going to be its own podcast, right?
Yes, it is. And Danny starts off, it's kind of obvious in the way he recorded it that he started off with a solo introduction to what he's talking about, and then he breaks into an interview that he did with someone else. Very interesting interview. I don't want to preempt it by discussing it in detail here. I think Danny may have also mentioned to us in his email or some other time that he would be submitting it to Hacker Public Radio, so you may hear it there as an episode as well, either before or after it becomes one of our episodes. But Danny, thanks for sending us that, and we'll have that in a future episode for sure.
Thanks very much. Excellent content. And when Danny says accessible, he's talking about accessible to sight-impaired people.
Yes, that's accessibility in general,
right,
for computer programs. Okay. Our next listener feedback is an email from Bob. And Bob, no, this isn't the Bob that Richard was accusing you of being. This is,
it's not my Bob. It's not my alter ego or my nom de plume. No.
Right, exactly. This is from Bob. And he sends us a link, and a link to an article on the WikiHow website. He says, "Hi, Tom. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. I started a wiki about how to use Puppy Linux on a USB flash drive. Perhaps you might include the link in your show notes and invite your listeners to join in and help to write it. I started one on Quick Synergy too, starting with the help that you gave me way back when." And there is a link. It's a link to WikiHow, control to computers using one mouse and keyboard with Quick Synergy. And the other one is run a computer from a USB drive using Puppy Linux. So Bob will include those links in the show notes too. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up from, I'm going to screw up your name, sorry, Ario. He's an electronic engineer in Iran and has exchanged a few emails with us, and we really haven't come to a solution yet. He starts out, "Hi, Larry. Hi, Tom. Hi, Ario.
Hi, Ario.
It's almost a year since I started listening to your podcast. It took months for me to realize that my laptop is too hot on Ubuntu compared to Windows 7. Now I know the reasons. Without proprietary drivers, GPU and the Southbridge chipsets will get hot under both Linux and Windows. Until now, I figured out the title of my problem can be like this: Power Management Problems with the SB700 Chips on Linux. SB700 is the main part of the M780G chipset of AMD/ATI. It's responsible for the Southbridge, a USB filter, and a SATA driver. The South Bridge is, as we know, the bridge for the CPU to connect to the USB and SATA and some other parts. On USB ports, it can't get current more than 100 milliamps, and thus trying to connect any USB device with high power consumption like external hard drive to the USB port will cause an enumeration error. Wow. Either using or idling the SATA hard drive in IDE or HCI mode will also cause the HDD to get too hot, up to 62 degrees centigrade. Wow. Both AHCI and the USB's integrated SB700. So, this is all about power management features on the SB700 chip. All of those problems exist on Windows 7 too, but only after installing the SB7XX USB filter and the SB7XX AHCI proprietary driver from AMD site, the problem solves on Windows. No driver exists for Linux. There must be a black magic for Windows users. I contacted the AMD Linux driver crew 2 times, but no answer. Do you know of any other ways to enforce them to provide such driver or some information? Thanks again, and best regards, Ario.
Well, Ario, I don't know of any way to force anybody to do anything,
no.
Especially in the software world. However, these folks probably are focused on their Windows drivers and aren't thinking about Linux. They, you know, ATI and AMD are they're pretty okay with providing Linux drivers, or at least the necessary information to be able to enable the Linux community to develop their own drivers, and that would include you. I don't know, other than asking them, other than being real nice, maybe you could ask around to the community, see if someone else has contact at AMD or ATI that would allow you access to this information, or at least get them to release it publicly. But
sure,
I don't have any magic.
No.
Yeah, if I did, I'd get that coupon printing software that we were talking about. yeah, it's you know, it has nothing to do with the Linux community, but my wife really wants it bad. Anyhow, yeah, this is definitely an ongoing issue with Linux, and will continue to be so as long as there is proprietary software out there, and that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. And 100 milliamps on a USB is not much.
Yeah. And you can tell he's an electrical engineer.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, our next email is from James. He says, hi.
Hi, James. Hi, James.
My name is James, and I'm new to Linux, and I was wondering if you can help me adjust to it. I like your podcast and find them very useful, but I need more one-on-one type help. I don't know. Maybe we can Skype and help show me. I'm good with computers and Windows getting my A+ certification, but would love to know more about Linux. Just think of me as an apprentice to you or something like that. Your help would be a big help for moving out of Windows to the FOSS world. You can email me at, and he gives his email address, look forward to hearing from you. If you would like, I can also call you if that's better. I'm a professional driver, so I'm out on the road some nights, and I'm trying to get into IT work. I want to get out of the trucking business. Thanks, James.
I think I sent James my Skype ID.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for that. Trying to get a hold of me is really difficult.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, see what we can do, James. And certainly we can't give everyone one-on-one help and hand-holding, but we do what we can, and certainly continue to listen to our podcast and all of the other podcasts I listed in the last Computer America episode. I didn't get through them all, but there's quite a list in the show notes, that's for sure. Lots of good listening and lots of good learning.
And next up, we've got an email from Ray. He's a veteran listener and email contributor to Going Linux. You may have noticed that he likes Linux Mint. Ray says, hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
In the last listener feedback episode, an email was read with a political flair. Oh, yeah. Are we going into this again?
All right. Maybe so.
The email was about Stallman and was refreshing. His socialist views are not the views of most of the Linux community, in my opinion. I'm very conservative, and that's why I love the freedom Linux has to offer. I think it's wonderful anyone can create, use, and develop software for Linux as long as it works perfect on Linux Mint. It's fantastic the open source community can work together so well to make Linux Mint better with each release. I think it's great there are so many distros to choose from as long as you end up using Linux Mint. Unlike me, Stallman has lost sight of what freedom is. Until he starts promoting Linux Mint, I cannot respect his singular mindset. Larry, you and Tom are such an asset to spreading the Linux freedom word that I'm going to make a donation. As soon as I hear you guys say Linux Mint is the only distro you use and recommend. Just kidding, guys. I'd like to thank you for your Linux excellence. I look forward to each show, even if you don't mention how awesome Mint is. Thanks, Ray.
Well, in case he isn't kidding, Linux Mint is the only distro I use and recommend.
Oh. me too.
Yeah, there we go. And I understand that Ray is going to be starting the Linux Mint Party for the 2012 elections here in the United States.
Very good.
he will be the only candidate running.
Yeah, right. And he's running on change.
Yeah.
About right, about right. 49 cents.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, thanks, Ray. All right, here's a short one. Bill from Vermont thought you might be very interested in this. 10 ways Linux can fix PCs. And he has a link to a How to Geek article. And that's it, Bill. Thanks very much.
Yep.
I'm going to make that the topic for my next Computer America episode. Don't tell them.
Okay.
So we'll use that as the inspiration.
And what he's talking about here is, I believe, if you've got a broken, and I'm going to use the word, prepare yourself, Windows
okay.
computer. Are you all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm okay.
You can boot up a Linux distro to help fix it.
Yeah. I like it.
All right, well, next up we got Daryl, and he and others, including Rich, Brian, Norman, also known as Genghis Prawn, set us straight on Linux multi-boot USB drives. Daryl says, hey. Hey, Daryl.
Hey.
I'm a new listener and am listening to some of the recent episodes to catch the gist of the show. I heard near the end of the episode you talked about a program called multi-boot or something like that. I wanted to mention pendrivelinux.com, the only tool I use under Windows for making bootable USB drives. Between Universal USB Installer, recommended by Canonical for making Ubuntu flash drives, the multi-boot USB, I have a 16GB flash drive with some 30 operating systems for troubleshooting, repairing computers at work. I haven't found anything missing. I'm sure you guys have heard of this site, but I just wanted to pass it along, as the caller slash writer from that episode sent you a link to a French site. To quote Kretz from The Bourne Identity, my French sucks. Signed, Daryl. Okay, I have looked at Pendrive Linux, and it runs in the Windows environment.
And Pendrive Linux site has so much stuff on it. It's hard to find things. And so we've got 5 links to stuff. 4 of them are on the Pendrive Linux site. The first one is Yumi, or I don't know what it's Yumi. Y-U-M-I, multi-boot USB creator for Windows. And that's one of the ones that many of our listeners have been pointing us to recently. There's another one that I don't think anybody's pointed us to, but as I was searching through the Pendrive Linux site, I found this one. It's the Sardu multi-boot USB creator for Windows. There's also a Linux Live USB creator for Windows that we've mentioned on previous episodes. All of those and the next one, Universal USB Linux Installer for Windows, are ways to create a USB drive with multiple Linux distributions on them from your Windows computer. So this is an excellent way to try many different distributions if you're still on Windows and you haven't tried them yet. So this is a great way to fill up your 16 gigabyte flash drive with all kinds of stuff you can try and spend lots of time figuring out what you want to do. There is also on the Pendrive Linux a multi-system, multi-boot USB creator for Linux. This allows you to put multiple Linux operating systems on your flash drive, but this in this case from Linux. So I haven't tried that last one, but that I think is what I'm looking for. Now, for those of you who are still on Windows, any one of those other ones might be what you're looking for, but since I'm not using Windows, they're not going to work for me.
Right.
But we've got lots of links there for anybody from either of those two operating systems to create what we're looking for. And I'm sure some of them are persistent images as well. So when you install or save something, it'll work.
All right. Well, thanks, Daryl, and others.
Yeah. And now we have a Gone Linux segment. And this one we may have to tag team on, Tom. This
sounds good.
From Brad. And he's got quite a lengthy discussion as to how he's gone Linux, but it's very interesting. So Brad writes, "Hey guys, I've just been listening to some of your older episodes and I felt inspired to write about my own going Linux experience, starting from something like 11 or so years ago and ending up being completed about 4 years ago. Probably going to be a longish email. If you do air it, feel free to compact or compile it."
Okay.
"By the way, sorry about any bad grammar. I have been up around 24 hours grinding away at code, so eyes and head are somewhat funky.
Funky.
Around 2000-ish, I had been told by a couple of online friends that I had to try this Linux thing. Though being a noob, I was open to trying something new. I hadn't even tried installing Windows at this point of time. After asking details, I was given the lowdown about distributions. I asked what would be the beginner-friendly distro, and I was given a link for Lindows. It was a disaster. It destroyed the partition I had, and worse, refused to install anything. So after 3 days of trying to work it out, I gave up and started trying to work out how to install Windows. 2 days later, well, I was back on Windows and figured I'll put this aside for another time. Fast forward to 2007. I have settled into doing web programming and being proficient in numerous languages such as HTML, CSS, XML, PHP, JavaScript, and so on. So I was familiar with Linux as a server OS, though I had never set one up, and after a nasty virus that went around and killed my desktop, came through the network protocol, so didn't even need a web browser or anything to open it, I figured it was time to give Linux another try. I first tried Fedora, and after downloading and burning something like 14 disks or so, it failed to install. So I sat back and figured I'd better ask around a few programming forums. A lot of coders tend to run Linux as a desktop, and I kept being told Ubuntu. And what do you know, it booted straight into an option to try or install. I decided to do a trial by fire and wiped my Windows partition and installed Ubuntu bare metal. I was impressed, to say the least. I did install Windows again in 2009 beside my Linux partition for some games, but an update from Microsoft conflicted with my graphics card, so I tried reinstalling the Catalyst driver and, well, had issues. So after calling Microsoft and ATI and being told by each to call the other, I found out that it was a known Microsoft bug with one of their updates that they had marked not to be bothered fixing.
Oh, good. And Brad goes on to say, so annoyed to no end, I told them where to put their operating system, that I was going back to using Linux solely, and that I would be very vocal about their lack of support and user-friendliness compared to Linux. Anyway, I now use Bash in the command line on a daily basis and have so many scripts automating tasks that switching away from Linux would be complicated, to say the least. Work and home are so embedded in Linux technology, it's not funny. I've tried numerous distros, but keep coming back to Ubuntu on the desktop and CentOS on the server. My wife even switched due to the user experience over Windows. Plus, she was frustrated by the constant upgrade cycle and having to pay $600 for a non-crippled version, whether they call it Extreme, Pro, or Ultimate, or whatever. What is there, like 50 different versions of Windows 7? To scam more money. Even my brother-in-law, who I doubt even knows what operating system means, smart guy just not interested in computers beyond doing what has to be done, wanted to be switched to that thing I run on my computer, and has not had a single issue since. Whereas beforehand, he was calling me up every week or so due to some computer issue. And
wow. Yeah, that's definitely, Brad has gone Linux hardcore.
Yeah, he is an evangelist.
Yes, very successfully too. I like it.
And by the way, my sister, who I woobied Ubuntu onto her machine, I told her you have to go to Linux at least once a week and run it for a little while. Well, I didn't do it this week because this, and I didn't do it this week because that. And then she got something really icky horrible on her Windows, and so she's over on Linux now.
Thank you, Windows.
Yes.
Yeah, you just wait long enough.
And, she's got all kinds of expensive antivirus stuff, and supposed to be the latest and greatest, and it's some prevention, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had somebody at work Friday come to me and say, Larry, I had this email that I got from my son, and it came from his email address, and it's obviously not from him, and it had this link to this news article, and I clicked on the news article, and apparently other people that he knows are getting the same sort of emails from him. Do you know what's going on?
Can you say bot?
I said, yeah. I was very tempted to say, yes, he's not using Linux, is he?
Right.
So, anyway, I didn't say that, but I was tempted.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Anyhow, that's it for our listener feedback this
really?
Time.
Really? Okay.
We still have lots more we haven't got to, and we'll try to get to it. We're not making any promises anymore that we're going to read them all, but
no.
We're kind of sifting through the ones that are very interesting, or summarizing several together if that's appropriate, or picking one of several that may cover the same topic, like the flash drive thing, the multi-boot thing, and trying to mention everybody who's made some contributions in that area. So I think that's the approach we'll take from here on out. Since we're getting so much email, we really appreciate all the email. It's just tough to get through, but don't stop. It's great stuff. Thank you.
And give us more audio. Do some articles.
Yeah,
do some programming. That's cool.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And software pick, for me, Linux.
Yep, Linux Mint.
Linux Mint. It's the only one that I use and recommend.
That's right.
All right. Well, Tom, unless you have something else you want to promote.
Let's close it down.
Okay. Well, our next episode will be Computer America number 37. And you know what the topic is going to be. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast. And if you don't remember what it was, just rewind. It's on your your media player. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
You can also send us audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail is +1-904-468-7889. And that's 1-904-4-OUR-TUX if you're dialing from North America.
And be sure to speak up, because if you talk quietly, it might hang up on you. And you can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word. You can download the episodes from our website, or you can use the HTML5 or the Flash Player to play them right in the show notes page.
You can also get future updates delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.